I have Jadel Cavillin with me on the phone. Jadel helped lead a presentation with other master gardeners on Wednesday to the community that included all kinds of stuff. I mean, it was about native plants, what they are, how to distinguish them from other plants. So many things I hadn't even thought of, but also how to, just all the practical realities of how to get started with, I think, just sort of transitioning to a more natural landscape in our yards and in our gardens. So thank you, Jadel, for doing that. And thanks for being with us this morning to recap it a little bit.
Oh, gosh. Thanks for having me. Yeah, what a great night. We had a good turnout. This was put on by the Lake County Extension Master Gardeners in place of our annual Mystery Garden Tour. Due to COVID, we haven't been able to do that the last couple of years. And then once we got the clearance pretty late in the spring this year to be able to start doing more public interaction, we decided to do this and highlight the community centers, native pollinator gardens down there. And yeah, it was a great night.
It was a great night. And it had, you know, kind of a lot of information and a lot of information you could take also. But then also, just the whole trip to an actual garden where we could learn what you were talking about inside. So I want to start by just talking a little bit about a couple of the things that I never knew before I went there on Wednesday. And one was some plants are sort of considered native plants when they have actually been cultivated. I guess they're called cultivars. Can you explain briefly the difference between all these plants? Because I just had no idea that, you know, something could be called native that actually was not really what you're after and not necessarily going to have the qualities that you need in order to attract the insects, etc.
So yeah, there's a couple different, a few different terms that horticulturists use to describe different types of plants and how they were propagated. Native plants are those which were established in an area without any human interaction. So things that have been here for 10,000 years, things that were not put here directly or indirectly by humans. And of course, the horticulture industry is great at making things aesthetically pleasing for humans. And so they have taken some of these native plants and bred them based on their qualities, maybe the color of their flower or the texture of their leaf, or sometimes they'll get variegated patterns in their leaves. And so they'll take seeds from that particular plant and continue to plant those out and select the seeds from those plants for the qualities that they're looking for. And so that actually then becomes a nativar. So that is a cultivar of a native plant that's been selected for. And over time, of course, some of those genetics are lost that maybe some of these insects that have co-evolved with these native plants select plants for. There are a lot of specialized insects out there that particularly forage on these native plants. And so if the flower shape changes a little bit, or if some chemical in the leaf, for instance, the monarch butterfly actually stomps on milkweed plants, and there's chemoreceptors in their feet that tell them if that plant is a milkweed plant or not. And so if something's changed a little bit, that can really alter the interaction between these insects that have co-evolved with the native plants. So a nativar is one that's been selected for. It's still a native plant, but not necessarily the original genetic strain of the native plants that we would find in the environment. Cultivar, on the other hand, is something that we've taken a plant and propagated it out for something specific, and that could be any plant. So a cultivar, let me see if I could give you a good example. A cultivar would be like a monarda or a bee balm. We have a native bee balm that's kind of lavender in color, but there's several types of bee balm or monarda available now that are not necessarily nativars anymore because they've bred them out so far that they don't reflect the native qualities anymore. And so those become cultivars. So
yeah,
they breed them to be shorter plants or more colorful, a completely different color than what you would find in the natural environment. So those become cultivars. And of course, when you're looking for these plants in stores, especially big box stores, Menards and, you know, those Lowe's and places like that are going to be selling plants labeled as native, but most often they're nativars. And they've also most likely been treated with some sort of herbicide or insecticide because they're grown in mass quantities.
So
Does that help a little bit?
It does. And I have to wonder, I'm just wondering if, I know I was thinking when we were talking about this, by far the safest thing, if you want to really get a native plant, is to buy it from Dan Schutte or from you or for someone that we know. But aside from that, it does seem like, is it good, better, best, worse? Like, is a nativar better than a cultivar? At least you might think it's adjusted less. I really did get what Dan was saying about the whole point of a native plant that's been here for 10,000 years is that it's going to specifically attract, insects that have also been here for 10,000 years in a very specific way. So you really do lose something by having sort of the adapted versions adapted to humans for whatever reason. They haven't really adapted to the insects necessarily. But do you think it's still okay to mix them? Or how purist is it important to be if you really want to bring back or encourage insects and other life in your yard?
Yeah, so what research shows, and Dan pointed this out to a wealth of knowledge he is in all of this stuff. He pointed out that research shows that if you plant a nativar next to a native, insects are going to still go to that native plant much more often and in larger populations than they would the nativar. So by and large, you are better off planting natives than you are any other plant in your gardens. But of course, in my experience, you can't get everybody to jump on that ship, and I get it.
Yeah.
My experience is that as long as we continue to add flowers that are producing pollen and nectar, we still are helping in some aspects. And there are a ton of nativars and cultivars that still do produce nectar and pollen. And those are the two primary sources of food for our native pollinators. Now, you're not going to attract, some of those specialized insects if you're choosing to use some of those other plants, but certainly you are providing a food source for something. And those seeds sometimes do attract birds and things too in the winter, some wildlife. So as long as you're planting and you're conscious of what you're planting and why you're planting it, I think that's the best we can do. We certainly have a situation in the U.S. especially with just lawn grass, and lawns are definitely not conducive to a healthy environment overall. So,
yeah.
And I try not to advocate to people, not to have any lawn space at all. I think lawns are important. It's wonderful for kids and dogs and for us to just have some leisurely space, but we also really overdo it in this country.
Uh-huh.
And so I think if we can just start incorporating some natural space into our properties or incorporate some native plants into those cultivated areas that we've done on our properties, we're at least helping something.
Right. And I got that message loud and clear on Wednesday that this is not an all or nothing proposition. You can start small. I know that what I started thinking was, do I have to pull out all my plants that are probably cultivars? But what I heard is that, just do something. Start with something, pick an area or pick a plant or pick at least, here's another fun fact, pick at least three of a plant and then three different types of plants to sort of clump together to support each other. Was that accurate, Jadel? And I think that was you that said that.
Different universities and research entities, but of course our insects can see and smell and are attracted to larger swaths of the plants that they're foraging on. So we do recommend that you plant at least three of whatever variety you select. And then it's really important too to think about, you don't just want one food source throughout the season, and eventually those flowers are going to dissipate. And so to select three different varieties of plants that are blooming throughout the different portions of our growing season. So we have kind of early spring, we have early summer, and then we have late summer, early fall. And so if you can find plants, and there's a wonderful bunch of lists out on the internet, if you, go to any of the university websites or Xerces Society, you can find lists for our specific area that will tell you which plants to plant during, to have that variety available to insects.
And we are so lucky in this area, because we also have the farmer's market, which has people like you and also plants for sale. And also we have Dan Schutte and the Shoreview Natives. I just figure there's no reason to be intimidated when we have someone that will just hand us the right things when we tell them our situation, too. I mean, we're just really lucky here, I think. I mean, I don't know how common Shoreview Natives is, but I doubt every small town in Minnesota has a Shoreview Natives right there.
Yeah, I don't think they do. Otherwise, I think we'd see a lot more native gardens.
Yeah.
But yeah, we are really lucky in this community. We have several native gardens just even throughout the Two Harbors area. And then, of course, you know, the more people learn about this and understand it, the more you see people kind of converting their properties a little bit over to the more natural and restorative environment. So it's definitely, I feel like we are very fortunate to be in this area and seeing that happen. And certainly if you aren't in this area and listening, there are plenty of registered nurseries out there that do sell native plants. Just make sure that you talk to them, get to know your nursery owner or grower, and you know, they will tell you their growing methods. And it's really important that if you're looking to convert some space into native planting areas, that you're not putting these native plants in gardens that you use insecticide or herbicides in. There are no insecticides out there that specifically target one kind of critter. So, you know, if you're using something to target, say, cabbage moth, you're actually going to be targeting all caterpillars, not just the caterpillar for cabbage moth. So it's important to think about that and think about your management strategies as you're converting your lawn space or your garden space over to native plants.
And it is possible, and depending on how big your garden is, you pointed out, to just go ahead and pick bugs off, pick plants off. It does take a little time, but it saves you from having to spray things and still having your good fruits and vegetables. I like that you shared that you'd just done that last night with something, I think.
Yeah. In fact, it was the green-striped plant bug. They're pretty common, and really they're not super detrimental to plants, but they were definitely getting into my peppers, which they won't kill the plant, but they certainly don't make it happy. They do have mouth-sucking parts that kind of destroy the leaves and such, and so they're pretty common on things like mint and peppers and some of our annuals like zinnias and stuff. But yeah, they're kind of lime green with a couple of black stripes, and their larvae are bright red, so they're pretty easy to see. But yeah, I noticed my peppers were having some damage on them, and I started looking around, and I found quite a population of these bugs. And though they're not necessarily going to kill my plants, they certainly stunt growth for yields and such.
Yep.
And so I just went out and picked them by hand and dropped them into a bucket of soapy water, and I haven't seen one since, even though it's been a couple of days. I'm sure there's still more out there. But I definitely, you know, I'm a beekeeper, so I certainly want to avoid using insecticides and herbicides in our gardens. And also just to be conscious, this is the food we're eating. So.
Right. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Adele. We're pretty much out of time, but just wanted to mention that we do have quite a few public spaces in town that are now native gardens or native grasses. The library is one, the community center. So, you know, anyone could go anytime and just take a look. And one thing I learned on Wednesday, too, is that it takes about 3 years for it to really take hold. So if it looks kind of funny for a couple of years, don't lose heart. You know, those roots are going deeper and deeper. And once it's established, it's pretty darn stable and beautiful as well. So anything to add before we close?
Yeah, just a quick shout out, you know, get those milkweeds into your garden with the monarch butterfly now being listed as endangered.
I was going to bring that up.
The population is definitely less from what I've seen this year and years past. And so, yeah, get your milkweed out there. Find people that grow it. There's plenty around here. So,
thank you. Yes, that's a big deal. All right.
It is a big deal, but there was a consecutive study that just went out yesterday, too, that showed that small spaces in people's yard actually do have a big impact. So we can still make a difference.
Great. That's all we need to motivate us to get going with that.
Yes.
Thank you, Jadel. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Katya.
Bye-bye. All right. That was Jadel Cavillin. What a wonderful gardener and master gardener and teacher she is.